5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome back into the Radcast, a very special episode. And with that being said, on the heels of what our subject is, on the heels of what we just witnessed, what we're going to be talking about, and who is with us today, I say in the spirit of wrestling, this week we are not the Radcast. No, kayfabe, we are the Good Time Boys Wrestling Podcast.
Good Time Boys Wrestling Podcast.
With that being said, I am Steven. I'm Matt.
And I am Jeffrey.
Welcome back, Jeff Wright, taking his rightful place as
the head of the table.
I am the head of my table.
Yes. We're here in Decatur, Illinois, recording later in the evening because we just...
Very late in the evening.
Very late in the evening because we just got done watching night two of WrestleMania 39. We kind of called an audible as the weekend went on. So as night one was happening, or right before it happened, we had planned on, we were coming down here to watch WrestleMania anyway, so we're like, okay, why don't we talk about WrestleMania 20, a very important WrestleMania, not just for the WWE, no matter hindsight, what you know happened a few years after that, time in between what happened with who was in the main event. It's also important for Jeff. It's that's an important year for Matt and I. 2004, just a few short months after WrestleMania 20, we got into wrestling, and we met Jeff in I met Jeff in 2004. So it was a very important year for three friends who really bonded over wrestling.
Who
all
are
these
still
years.
Friends,
still
to
friends. This day,
19 years later.
In Decatur,
where it all
with
begins.
Jeff at him, again. His wife Katie's house, watching wrestling. So night one was about to start. If all of you don't know and you're listening, WrestleMania since 2020 has been split into two nights. Smart decision.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
I was going to say here's the thing with WrestleMania. I don't remember where it went exactly. It shifted, but it became this like 7.5 hour slog.
It's like a work day.
Yeah, exactly. And WrestleMania is the biggest pay-per-view of the year. And it used to be 4 hours, but it made sense. It was the biggest pay-per-view of the year, but then they added a bunch of stuff and like all these like pre-matches and all this pomp and circumstance. And you started as a viewer and then people in the crowd, you started to just get worn down after, you know, hour six, hour seven, stuff like that. And you really, WWE kind of shot themselves in the foot with that because by the time you get to the most important match on the card, everyone was just worn out.
It's exhausting to watch it on my couch.
It is. So I can't imagine being there when the show is 7.5 hours. So if you're there, you've probably been there longer. We're talking like 9 or 10 hours.
Maybe some people even get there 12 hours total.
Exactly. So you're when you need the crowd the most for the main event, they are just done.
Yeah.
So due to COVID, they split it up into two nights. And then ever since then, they saw the success of that. And they're like, let's keep doing it.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the smartest decision they've made in a long time.
And
because then you get 2 4-hour shows.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have an audience that's rested at the end of the first night. They can go to their hotels, homes, wherever, sleep. Yep. Get a good night's sleep, come back just as energized for the next set of matches.
Exactly.
And you can let the matches breathe as well.
That's the thing. I'll hit on that here in just a moment. Originally, we weren't going to give a recap of WrestleMania 39. We were here
as a part of our WrestleMania weekend, we were going to do a WrestleMania 20 episode. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I was leading to, kind of what we were going to talk about. So before night one, I was like, well, why don't we wait until the end of WrestleMania, and then we'll give our thoughts on how WrestleMania was, be a bonus episode. WrestleMania 20 will be the episode proper.
Yeah.
And Matt and Jeff were like, well, why don't we just make it a review of WrestleMania?
Because of how good night one was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
insane. Top to bottom.
It was incredible. We'll get into that here right now. But just piggybacking off of what you guys said about making it two nights, kind of what you were saying, Matt, it gives the audience a chance to go rest up, to re-energize, reinvigorate themselves, but also it gives you a chance to let the results sink in, to kind of formulate opinion on the night. It might decide the trajectory of the next night. You know, you can, and like in this case, you can set the bar for the next night to try and hit, and it's just win-win for everybody. When you have a 10-hour show and you have all this stuff thrown at you, your head's spinning. You don't know which way is up by the end of the night. All you know is you're exhausted and you want to leave.
Exactly.
So you don't have that chance to kind of think about and let marinate what you just saw in order to formulate a good opinion, because sometimes people are just, they form opinions based on frustration or fatigue because they're there for so long. So night one, all of you listening, minus maybe a few people who listen every week who are our family, you all probably have a passing, you know, knowledge of what happened at WrestleMania this year. If you're listening, you're more than likely, you're somebody who watched it, knows what happened, because this is coming out late after everyone else has probably recapped it.
Before we get into the nights, I want to acknowledge our champion.
Oh yeah, so we did something different this year. So Jeff contacted us a few weeks ago, and essentially, Jeff, you made up these this
scorecard.
Yeah, why don't you give us a little rundown? Yeah.
So I shout out to Cultaholic.
Yeah,
yes.
It's one of my favorite wrestling news channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
reaction videos, everything like that. They always do predictions, so I was watching their predictions episode for WrestleMania 39, and I just got struck by inspiration to have a competition of our own.
Yes, very friendly competition.
Very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put down all the matches for WrestleMania 39, and gave us the opportunity to predict who was gonna win, and then we actually can put who actually won.
Yeah,
we get points if we predicted the right winner.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a tie, which there was a tie this year,
yes.
On the flip side of that, I had a card placement order.
Mm-hmm.
If you correctly predicted the most amount of matches in order as they happened, you won the tiebreaker.
Yep.
And then we even had some fun bonus predictions.
Yes. Give us a chance to flex our creative muscles.
Yes. Fun fact, I didn't get a single one, except I put an example on the card that Steven actually came up with. And that was that Rey Mysterio was going to spank his son Dominic in the middle of the ring, which he
did. We literally put it as a silly, goofy example because we're silly, goofy boys, not just good time boys, but we're also silly, goofy boys. Mm-hmm. And Steven's like, Dominic's been a bad boy. So I think an example of a prediction should be he spanks him in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm. And it happened.
And it happened.
And we went nuts.
Popped so crazy for it.
Yeah, almost more than we did for a lot of serious things that night.
But other than that, I didn't get a single bonus prediction right. But that could give you additional points. But it was a tie between Matt and Steven at the end of the night.
Yeah.
They didn't surprise me too much with the winners, but they got me a couple times, and you guys down to the wire, but Steven is our first ever Good Time Boys WrestleMania champion.
Congratulations, Steven.
Yes, and Jeff took the time to take just a small little toy belt you'd find in the toy section at a Target or Walmart, and he jazzed it up, put a whole lot of flair on it, and it is something to be proud of.
We'll have to take a picture of it and post it on the social media.
So night one, John Cena and Austin Theory, There was a Fatal 4-Way Men's Tag Team Showcase match, which those can go, you know, they can be a cluster F, it can be whatever. This one was incredible. We'll get into that. Seth Rollins faced Logan Paul. We had Damage Control, which is Bayley, Io Sky, Dakota Kai against Becky Lynch and Lita, the women's tag champs, and Trish Stratus. Rey Mysterio and Dominik, which we just mentioned that match. The women's champion, SmackDown championship match, Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair, and the main event of the evening, a tag match for that for the unified undisputed tag team championships, the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens.
Both main events of both nights, culminations in a way of a very long running storyline,
3 year storyline,
3 years, which doesn't happen that often.
No,
and really in wrestling anymore, long term storytelling, which is what they used to, how they used to book WrestleMania, you know, in the old WWF days, was they had, there's like, here's our WrestleMania main event, and we're gonna build towards that, and you don't have that anymore. It's like boom, 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 quick, quick, quick. You know, sometimes they'll let stories fizzle out too soon, or they won't let it breathe, all that stuff.
Or they'll just try to ramp up the build up for it in like 2 months.
Yeah, exactly. But this, both nights had main events that involved the, a very long-term storytelling. One result was very satisfying, and one
was confusing.
I don't know what they're trying to accomplish.
We'll try and hash out our thoughts here on this episode here. But night one, just starting there. Night one, no wasted motion.
Night one, I saw on Twitter and Reddit and stuff, a lot of people saying, and I agree with it. Night one could have been its own standalone WrestleMania. And it would have been near perfect.
Even though, you know, it had its pre-stuff, you got to sit through a pre-show for 2 hours if you throw on Peacock at 5 o'clock. But as soon as the show starts, a few video packages here and there, you throw in a few celebrities because it's WrestleMania, goes Hollywood. But then,
and it's just WrestleMania.
The show starts, Austin Theory versus John Cena. Austin Theory, the heel, but obviously someone even before this night kind of got that Cena stamp of approval. This guy who has been built up, and then he's been kicked down because he was Vince McMahon's boy. And then once Vince was gone, you saw him job out a lot of the time. Coming into the night, United States champion, challenging John Cena. John Cena making his temporary return, great on the mic anytime he showed up on Raw, pretty much telling Austin Theory, you're not ready, kid. Austin Theory comes out as smug as ever. John Cena comes out with Make-A-Wish Kids on the stage.
Because if you don't know, because you said at the beginning that if you're listening, you probably know at least in passing. I think we do have a lot of people that listen that don't watch wrestling. So it may come as a little confusing, but John, you know who John Cena is. And it's one of, part of his reputation, not only is the face of the company for the past, you know, 20, he's been in WWE for 20 years, but for the better part of 15 years longer, he's been the face of the company. He's granted the most Make-A-Wish wishes
over
at like
600
ever of anyone, not just of a wrestler.
And we won't go move by move here. We'll just kind of give our thoughts. A solid opener.
It was good. It, you know, I was talking to Matt earlier in the day. Cena, I think, has acknowledged in interviews and stuff how he used to give crap to The Rock for like playing it safe in matches and not going as hard, not going into the ring as often. But he's realized being in movies and TV now, people depend on me to be not injured and to be able to work and to do things, or things get halted and people don't get paid. So I think Cena played it safe. I think he also has the, I don't want to say like authority, but he has the ability to decide to play it safe. He's got the stroke to play it safe. It was solid though. They went through the motions that a Cena match should have, and I think the right guy came out on top.
See, you got to see the John Cena spots. You know, he did his quote unquote five moves of doom and all that stuff. I think the result was as it should be.
I think Austin Theory should have won, and he did, because
he's the future.
He's the future. Mm-hmm. Cena now acknowledges himself as part-time, and that's something he used to give The Rock crap for. Now he's like, actually, yeah, I'm part-time as well, so it wouldn't have made much sense for Cena to go over, and it's John Cena, but at the same time, like, Cena's not going to be there, you know, couple weeks down the road, but Austin Theory will. So it's like, where does that put Austin Theory if he loses? And plus, Austin Theory had, you know, give or take, been kind of buried up to this point. Like, he's got the United States title, and having a belt should put you in the spotlight. But even in this build to this match, John Cena, who's a master on the mic and has been for years, sort of buried Austin Theory. And so I think this gives Austin Theory a big, you know, the push that he should be getting, and it makes him look good, I think. And just general, you know, old school wrestling rule of thumb is you put over the young guy when you're essentially on your way out.
And if there's this is just another way to make Austin Theory that much more insufferable.
Quote unquote,
you know, within the
world of wrestling, I beat John Cena at WrestleMania.
And it didn't come without him cheating. You know, he bit John Cena like on the ear.
He's the heel.
I mean, a few old school heel things, biting, you know, doing underhanded tactics. But it also, it like you guys said, it makes sense. You're not going to have John Cena win, drop the title the next night, because then what, it takes the piss out of Austin Theory, what you're trying to do there. So Austin Theory, now he can run off on the mouth of how he beat the great John Cena. But then you bring out someone who said, you know, you could bring out someone who's like, yeah, so have I, but I'm still here. What are you going to do about it?
I will say, and I don't mean this in a bad way, because usually when someone says unremarkable, it's taken in a bad way. When I say unremarkable, I mean like there was nothing crazy and wild, you know, that kind of, in wrestling, you kind of demand from an opening match to get everyone into it, sort of a top that moment.
I think that came in the next match.
I was just about to say, definitely in the next match. This one, I mean, you had to play it safe because it was John Cena. When I say it was unremarkable, it's essentially just that. Like, there was no crazy WrestleMania high spot. It literally was just a match between Cena and Theory. Theory goes over like he should. I think I was reading, like, on Bleacher Report that it just kind of felt like a match on Raw. But that doesn't mean the match was bad.
But it had John Cena.
But it had John Cena. Exactly. And John Cena, at this point, we were talking about stroke. He could say anytime he's on the card, I'm John Cena, I should be in the main event somehow. And He
wouldn't be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact that he's like, I'm going to open the show. And it's kind of poetic that, you know, in his first WrestleMania, he opened the show, WrestleMania 20, he opened the show for the United States title. And what could be maybe his last as a competitor opens the show for the United States title.
That's cool.
Before we move on, just to summarize here, I think what happened there, solid. Going to your point that you and Matt talked about, John Cena didn't want to do too much, didn't want to go too long for risk of injury. He has film projects, TV projects on the horizon. So there's that. Also, going on first, sometimes you don't have the benefit of, you know, timing wise, you don't know how to dictate the pace of your match. So maybe you're told you have 8 to 10 minutes to do, including entrances, to do what you need. So you don't know the flow of the, you are setting the pace, you're setting the flow. So sometimes that's a tough role to get into. I don't think there's, you can count on one hand how many WrestleMania openers really like popped it off. You know, I'll give it more. There's been 39 of them. I'll give it a little more credit there. You can count on a hand and a half how many really just popped off the crowd, like, and really set the pace.
They can't all be Owen and Brett at WrestleMania.
Owen
Hart and Bret Hart.
Can't all be Eddie versus Ray at WrestleMania 21. So let's go on to the second match. A match that could easily either take up too much time, not get enough time. And when it doesn't get enough time with all those people in there, it can become, like I said earlier, a cluster F. This is something you kind of, these showcase matches, especially with, like in this, four tag teams, you do to put people on the card. WWE
have been not notorious, but they've been known to kind of do that
just
and
throw
really
people out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And with just a 5-6 hour show, you know, you have other things you have to do, but yeah. with these two nights, mm-hmm. you can give this one a little more room to breathe. And that yeah. is the 4-man tag match,
yeah.
which was a blast.
It absolutely mm-hmm. was. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Jeff said, it could have been that show opener that it's like, okay, mm-hmm. it gets everyone juiced mm-hmm. where, you know, the crowd is ready. Go top that.
Yeah.
Give me the juice.
Yeah.
Give me the juice.
And I think it's a 4-man, 4 tag teams. So yeah. there's yeah. 8 men working. The way these usually work, of course, like in a tag match, 2 guys start.
Yeah.
And then the way that other teams can mm-hmm. get in, you can tag your guy. Or usually the strategy is other teams blind tag in. You can create yeah. more layers and more depth yeah. of like animosity as much as you can with storytelling and yeah. stuff like this. But it's essentially what these turn into, and that's people getting their shit in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People getting moves in, and then you have the wrestlers like Chad Gable.
Yeah.
Who,
let's do the teams.
Yeah.
Ricochet and Braun Strowman mm-hmm. are a tag team. Mm-hmm. Chad Gable and Otis.
Alpha Academy.
Yeah. Street Profits, Samantes Ford and
Angelo Dawkins.
And
the Viking Raiders.
Who the name escapes me.
Yeah. But you get everybody.
Eric and Ivar.
But you yeah. get everybody getting stuff in, and you give. Yeah. You know, you help kind of spotlight a few people. You know, Chad Gable hitting a German suplex on Braun Strowman.
Rolling German suplex.
Yeah, who is a mountain of a man.
Yeah.
And Angelo Dawkins, you know, pouncing, you know, the pounce, you know, knocking Braun Strowman yeah. right off his feet. You get Ricochet hitting two beautiful shooting star presses.
Yeah. You had the typical spots of a match like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the men. It's cluttered. You get everyone gets their spot. Everyone gets to do their thing, mm-hmm. their high spot. You know, you've got the big superplex that they do. I think they call that move like the Tower of Terror or whatever, where every participant.
I've ridden that ride.
Really? Mm-hmm. I saw the picture today. I was looking through your Disney book.
Oh.
Where essentially all the guys gather in the corner and they're all on each other's shoulders and essentially getting each other up for a big vertical suplex. Mm-hmm. And you got one guy jumping on all of them. You've got the big spot on the outside of the ring to where mm-hmm. everyone's on the outside of the ring. And you got someone hopping over the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
It was a spot fest. It was fun. It gets everyone ready. Mm-hmm. And it was an exciting affair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It really, you know, it's usually what you do is you retrofit whoever, you know, mm-hmm. whoever you're going to spotlight for that Mania's multi-man yeah. tag match and what they do, the personality yeah. of their character and yada, yada, yada. That's just what they did here, but it was a good mm-hmm. time.
Yeah. And the Street Profits won.
And the Street Profits won, which yeah. is good.
I was surprised.
Because mm-hmm. they are, I too was surprised, but it made sense because it seems like they've been pushed pretty heavily. Mm-hmm. Or at least Montez Ford, it seems like he's been pushed pretty heavily because yeah. they don't really highlight Angelo Dawkins that mm-hmm. much.
I was glad that he got a big spot tackling Braun.
I do too. Mm-hmm.
And maybe gave him the pen.
Yeah, and after that maybe it's like, you know what, let's keep our eye on Angelo Dawkins over there.
I thought there's gonna be dissension yeah. between the two of them,
in a match like this it's been done so many times, especially at WrestleMania, that the spots they did, like the big spots, would typically be played out, but I think the players here, I think, was a good group of guys, really good group of guys out there
yeah.
mm-hmm. That made it just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Match 3 was Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul, and like a lot of wrestling fans out there, much to their chagrin, we got to give Logan Paul credit.
So good.
I hate to say it. I don't think he's a very good person, and he's a grifter and a yeah. douchebag and a scam artist.
Yeah.
His brother's an A1 asshole. His dad's a dumbass. His mom's a dumbass.
Oh, so he can curse
ass.
On this show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're saying cluster F.
Oh, I'm sorry. sorry, this is After Hours. I guess I know it's the Good Time Boys
yeah.
edition.
We are Good Time Boys.
Yes,
we are,
but it technically, I guess, still is the Radcast in a way.
Sometimes Good Time Boys got cussed sometimes.
Yeah.
Usually with... The reason we're so floored that he's so good is that usually when someone comes from outside of the world of wrestling, mm-hmm. celebrity, internet personality, mm-hmm. whatever,
it's very clear because wrestling isn't just something that you can just jump in and do. It's not like a trampoline. No. It's not like, oh, well, it's I watch it on TV. I can go and do it. Like, you have to legit train to take bumps, learn how to throw working punches, learn how to communicate and work together, because you've got to work together to put on a performance, but you also have to make it look convincing. There's little ring psychology things. You got to learn facials, how to sell, like... There's so many little things.
How do you even hit the ropes?
You have to learn how to hit the ropes. People are like, oh, you can just bounce off the ropes. You know, it's real bouncy. It's like, you don't do that correctly, you could break a rib. So it's one of those things to where there's so many little nuanced things that go into wrestling.
And he took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah, which is not typical of people who come in from the outside.
No.
There are people who are new, who are like trained wrestlers who are rookies or are new, who have been it for a couple years, who still look green, who still don't know how to keep the pace of a match, don't know how to string moves together, don't know how to tell a story, like that still need work, and they're still green, and you can tell Logan Paul looks like he's been doing this for ages.
I was about to say, he's been doing this part-time for about a year. And if you would have told me secretly he's been training for the past 10 years, I would have been like, okay, he actually looks like he has.
And that's why it sucks, because he's such a jackass of a person, and you want him to fail at this.
Yeah.
And he jumped in and he gets it. Like, he's almost a prodigy in a sense.
Yeah.
And I've listened to him. And we're giving him a hard time. He's done douchey things, but he's certainly more mature than his brother Jake.
And I think he means well.
I think he means well. I think he's grown a lot. He's been in the spotlight for a long time because he's been on YouTube for a long time. I think he's grown a lot. I will give him that. But he still does douchey things.
He still does scammy things,
too. Yeah, exactly. But I've heard him on his podcast, and like, it wasn't just, I'm going to get into wrestling for more exposure, for the payday, for clout. He's like, once I started to learn how this worked, I wanted to be the best at it. Like, according to Triple H, his work ethic is insane to learn these things, and he just gets it. So every single time he's been involved, you sit there and you're like, God, he has no business being this good. Like, he just gets it. And he goes in there with professionals, experienced veterans, and he has had the benefit of working with really good people that he can bend the ear of, who can kind of show, no pun intended, show him the ropes and really and be ring generals and guide him through his matches. But he still has to hold up his end of the bargain. And he's an athletic guy.
Because I mean, it was last year he wrestled in his first match at WrestleMania. And I remember watching it then and expecting him to fail.
Just look embarrassing.
Like, there have been celebrity matches at WrestleMania before. Most of the time, they don't look great.
No.
Can't fault them because they're not trained wrestlers.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I just expected the same thing from Logan Paul. And last year, he amazed everyone.
Yeah.
He's had two matches.
Yeah, I think he singles. I think he had one against The Miz.
And one against Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So this is his fourth match.
Yeah.
And it's insane how good he is.
Yeah. Fourth match, all matches on a big stage.
Yeah.
And so not just how good he is with in-ring work, but how poised he seems, how unaffected he seems by all the pomp and circumstance, the crowd, all that stuff. And he's a heel. Like, they're pushing him as a heel. That's good. He's a natural heel. He's been great on the mic.
Bad guy.
Yeah. He's been great on the mic. He's like, how he communicates with the crowd and communicates with the camera. Like, all I can say is, you sit there and you're like, I hate to say it, but this guy gets it. And he's great. And he's getting, and he's just like, I don't see him getting any worse or anything. And I don't know. It's just it was a great match.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that his opponent was Seth Rollins.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say he's
one of the best in WWE
Seth is
today.
Incredible. He had the Rollins.
In this particular instance, I mean, surprise, surprise, it was a good match. He did a great job again.
He looked like he belonged.
Yeah, and the great story essentially was Seth wanting to shut Logan Paul up and telling him, you know, you are a huge troll. You're a douchebag, and you have no place here. Yeah. We don't want you here. We don't want you in our house.
Yeah. Seth Rollins came up through the ranks in the independent scene. He learned. He has a passion for it. Since he was a kid. He loves it. He's like, you can't just waltz in our world and think that you're entitled to anything.
Mm-hmm. But it was a good match. You could see starting out, Logan was arrogant and smarmy, but to his credit, as Seth went on and Seth would mount comebacks or mount offensive maneuvers, offensive sequences, and Logan would have to fight from under at points. You could see the look on his face of him like having to sell being down and out in a moment.
Sold an injury.
There was a moment to where Seth stomped on Logan's hand that was pinned on the steel steps and he sold it and not just like held it, but like his hand position was contorted. Yeah. So like he sold it the rest of the time. And I remember we were like, sell it, make sure you're selling it. And he did.
Yeah.
And he sold it. And he had this look on his face where it was almost like, you know, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like he seemed like he had his back up against the wall and his facials were good. And he brought in one of his jackass friends. And I'm not talking like last year when the cast of Jackass showed up.
Yeah.
KSI, who he has his company Prime with, and they do like a we did a little advertisement for it a few weeks ago. Fight Milk.
Yeah, exactly.
But KSI, like during his entrance, he brought someone out in a Prime bottle costume, and KSI was his jackass friend KSI, and so Seth is prone on the announcer's table, and Logan Paul is like. He's on the top turnbuckle and inside of the ring, and it looks like he's going to jump on top of Seth, and Seth pulls KSI out because he's being a moron and, you know, flattens KSI. But even that, like, had its place.
Yeah.
Seth ended up winning, but it is one of those things where Logan Paul showed up.
Yeah. And to his credit, he wants to take risks.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to do those big high spots of frog splash to the announce table. The moves he's choosing to do... Mm-hmm. Those aren't amateur, and I'm not talking like amateur, like Olympic wrestling amateur moves, but like those aren't moves that like anyone who's just getting started are going to try to attempt. A buckshot lariat. Like
does it better than some wrestlers.
Yeah, exactly.
With initials for their name.
Exactly. Yes. And he's
block me on Twitter. I dare you.
Yeah, come on. CM Punk. Okay.
I wasn't going to say it, but okay.
You can block me on Twitter. He's not. He's, you know what? He will listen to this and he will appreciate our gumption. I don't know. He just does things with a confidence to where it's like, you should not be as confident as you are in doing these moves that take a lot of wrestlers forever to hone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the guy gets it. It's just winning, I thought, was the right decision.
Mm-hmm. It surprised me because I had Logan winning it.
I did too. Yeah.
He lost his last match against Roman. So me and Matt were talking this morning about this a little bit. I expected Logan to win, but looking back on it, he's been wrestling for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most wrestlers who do this full time in their first year when they wrestle lose the most of their matches.
Yeah.
It's just that Logan Paul does it so infrequently at this point that you forget he's only been doing it for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So on a career trajectory, he has a lot of room where he can lose and not really suffer from losing regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if this is the route he chooses to go, I don't know if he will, but he has expressed, you know, a desire to really do this, if not full time, relatively more consistently. Mm-hmm. My hope is, my opinion still hasn't changed on the guy. I don't like him at all. Again, I'm giving him his credit. He has done very well. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping he gets involved more with the WWE,
universe, more the WWE way of doing things. You know, he's in the locker room more, he can interact more and be humbled by people, and more importantly, get involved with the charitable stuff WWE does, so he can, you know, just be humbled, and he can really see, you know, how much of an influence he has on people, because he's had an influence on kids since he's been doing his YouTube stuff, and he does dumbass stuff even with kids watching. So hopefully this is an instance where, like, okay, you are a representative of this company now. It's, you're not just a representative of yourself and YouTube. You're a representative of the WWE, which is arguably bigger than something like YouTube. You can't be a jackass like that. You, because we take our service to kids especially very seriously.
Yeah. And one more thing I'll say before we move on to the next match is other time, also when people come in from the outside, they look really out of place just physically. He's a very well-built guy. Like, he's standing.
Very handsome boy.
He's a very handsome guy.
He could be conceivably a wrestler.
Standing face-to-face with Seth Rollins, there wasn't much difference in their body type and their appearance. No. He's in very good shape.
Yeah. So the next match was kind of the first we see, I guess besides John Cena, but kind of this first we see of, like, a throwback nostalgia, you know, part to it. It's a six-woman tag match.
Yeah.
Damage Control, who they've really been trying to establish. They are a heel team.
Yeah.
They have three very good workers, great mouthpiece with Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky, who are on NXT for the longest time, were gone from the company, pinned back last SummerSlam. And they've been doing well as being, like, the bratty, annoying, obnoxious heels. They just aren't given many wins and many, you know, or being on top of people's, Bayley especially. So they come in and they're facing the tag champs of Becky Lynch and randomly Lita. And then you throw Trish Stratus in there. Yes. And it all seemed very random.
I didn't get it. You know, we're recording this after night two of WrestleMania, before Raw. Typically the Raw after WrestleMania is something that's supposed to be exciting and have surprises and shocks and twists and turns. I expected Trish Stratus to turn on her teammates in this match because I felt it felt very random, and to me it felt random for a purpose. Like, we're being random right now because we're gonna have something happen that would make sense from this. So I expected Trish to turn. You'll be listening to this after the Raw, after WrestleMania. Yeah. So I'm hoping maybe Trish turns her team then.
Yeah.
Because, yes, it was just very bizarre of this team to just come together.
Yeah, especially considering that for most of their careers, Trish and Lita were at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm. Which is partly why I thought she was going to turn on Lita.
Yeah, which makes sense. But I feel like you've been away so long, you become a legend. Yeah. Like, none of that history, like, it matters.
We're all friends now that we don't work together.
Exactly. That history is mentioned in a promo package or on the announce team. You know, they'll mention it during the match. Like, these two feuded and now, you know, they're working together, you know, stuff like that. So it doesn't really hold much weight after they've been out of the company for a long time. And that would have been something that was really interesting. It's like, you know, you think just because, you know, we've been out of the business and we're both in the Hall of Fame and now we're quote unquote legends, that you think I haven't forgotten about, like, our feud or something, you know, just something cool like that.
I think it was a fun match. It was fun. And I think the purpose it ultimately served was, you know, Becky Lynch is tagging with two people who influenced her.
Yeah.
Same thing with Bayley and Io Sky and Dakota Kai. They all have said, we all know you two are two of the biggest reasons, at least and from the women's standpoint, of why we got into wrestling. So it was cool for Becky to experience that with her partners. It was cool for Bayley to mock Lita and Trish by doing their, you know, classic motions, you know, that Lita would do in her entrance, that Trish would do in her entrance. And it was just a cool thing to kind of let all of those women experience that. I'd say the best part was whenever the four women who are consistently
who are active,
who are working every day, essentially Becky, Bayley, Io, and
Dakota
did the best. Trish and Lita were fine.
I'll be the bad guy. I don't think Lita did very well.
Neither do I.
it's justifiable.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't think she looked great in the ring.
Yeah.
But to be fair, and I've had this opinion for a while, I don't think she was really ever good. To me, at least. I think she was always just kind of fine. Mm-hmm, she's a trailblazer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not taking anything away there. I mean, she not only came up in a time, especially in the WWE, where women were just paraded out there as eye candy, mm-hmm, and there was a very thin field of actual women's wrestlers.
Yeah.
She not only came up in that time, but she melded like a lucha influence. Mm-hmm. She did a moonsault. Mm-hmm. No women in the mainstream were doing
very
that.
Alternative style.
Yeah, very alternative style, especially when she was with the Hardy Boys.
Yeah.
But when you watch her matches, they're very kind of sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a whole lot of anything that's impressive. It's like, let me do just a bunch of okay to poorly executed moves until I can do my moonsault. Mm-hmm. And that's what everyone came to see.
Yeah.
Again, not taking away her as a trailblazer, and mm-hmm, she deserves all of her accolades. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things to where I've never been really impressed with her in-ring work.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think she showed her ring rust.
Yeah.
On the flip side, I think Trish looked very smooth still.
Sure.
Mm-hmm, for as long as she's been away from the ring. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't look like she was missing a step by much.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say I expected from especially Lita, but even from Trish, given that they both had that ring rust, I expected more botched moves.
Yeah.
And you could tell the two of them were working kind of slower.
Mm-hmm. The timing issue.
Rhythm was off.
Yeah, the rhythm and pace was a little off. You could tell that they were being a bit, they were purposefully kind of trying to take their time because mm-hmm, they're like, because of the potential of botching, because they haven't done it in a mm-hmm while,
they executed the moves correctly,
mm-hmm,
but it was just a little slower, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to hop in there with Becky Lynch and have a five-star match or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not a five-star match.
No.
I would give it a solid three.
Yeah. Solid three. The four active women mm-hmm helped carry them. You got signature Trish and Lita spots. Mm-hmm. We got the nostalgia pop, because that's what WrestleMania is about. That's always what, and also something, Vince McMahon was not at the reins mm-hmm this year, which is the first time ever for WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. It was Triple mm-hmm H's baby. And so typically with WrestleMania, you bring in superstars from the past, because even if you haven't watched wrestling in forever, casual people will hop on to watch mm-hmm WrestleMania just to see if anyone from their childhood is on there. Mm-hmm. And so they got the nostalgia pop, they did their moves, and the four active people helped carry them through.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fine match.
It didn't slow the night down, which is what you're looking to do, to keep the momentum going.
Yeah.
And it kept it going into the next match, which was one of the more personal matches of the night. Dominic.
Very fun match.
Dominic versus Ray.
Very fun match.
Of course, I've been keeping my eye on not actively watching everything because I don't have access to TV. But ever since Dominic came in, I still kept my eye on the product.
Yeah.
And I never was impressed with Dominic until he really started getting to his own with the Judgment Day.
Yeah. And working with Rhea Ripley, like mm-hmm in the Judgment Day, but part of the story with Rhea Ripley, mm-hmm, to where she's like his girlfriend, but also like kind of
it's like a, dominant
role, kind of like I'm your mommy, kind of stuff like that. Which it's a reference to something from his past, to where it was the whole thing with Eddie Guerrero, like I'm your poppy, is part of this storyline, to where like Dominic Ray Mysterio is not your father, I'm your father, whatever. Yeah.
2005.
It's a different time.
Yeah. If you want more info on that, ask us, and we'll do a deep dive on that storyline. Yes,
exactly.
For more Good Times Boy content.
If you want more Good Time Boy content, just let us know, and we might make it an actual podcast. We've been talking about it for years.
We've been toying with it.
Yeah.
Can't ever get the schedules to line up, which is fine. We all have different lives, and it's tough for... We would have to do remote most of the time, because Jeff lives here in Decatur.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We've done it before.
Yeah. But Dominic, up until he turned heel, turned into mm-hmm a bad guy, he was mm-hmm tagging with Rey Mysterio, his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, he's very green.
He's bland.
Yeah, very bland. Not very good on the mic. Just kind of like,
hey, everyone, like smiling, waving.
Hey,
baby
I'm
face.
Ray's son.
Yeah, just really
good one,
just.
Good
I'm,
one, Daddy.
Yeah, isn't it cool that Rey Mysterio's tagging with his son? Uh-huh. That kind of felt like it just should have been
it was
one-off thing.
Yeah,
it's
it
a,
was cool.
It is. But, like, he really came into his own once he turned heel and joined the Judgment Day. Yeah. And he's been, along with the Bloodline, the Judgment Day have been probably the second biggest highlight of WWE, maybe even wrestling in general, over the past year at least.
Yeah. Dominic's been taking a lot of great inspiration from his dad. Mm-hmm. He came out tonight in a ring gear that...
Not tonight, but...
Night one.
Yeah.
Oh, this is all a blur.
Yeah, right?
He came out during his match in gear that... looked very similar to gear that his dad Rey Mysterio wore in a very classic match he had with Eddie Guerrero, who you referenced.
Halloween Havoc. Go listen to that episode. We did it 3 years ago in October.
Mm-hmm. But also, he's been taking stuff from his dad, but he's been also taking stuff from Eddie Guerrero, who was very close to his dad and him while he was growing up before Eddie passed away. So he's been like melding both of them together and like creating something new from it. And he's just really come into his own and he's gotten so, so good.
Oh yeah. And he's playing the role of the bratty snot nosed son. Like, you know, you're
chicken shit.
Yeah.
Heel.
You don't know what I've done for you. And you're throwing all that in my face. Yeah. You know, it's because I did all, you know, essentially like the, you never were there dad and blah, blah, blah. Try to goad Rey Mysterio for the last month.
Yeah.
You know, have a match with me at WrestleMania. Hit me.
Yeah.
And Rey, he's the honorable guy he is. He's like, you're my son. I'm not going to hit you. Yeah. And all the while, Rey's being attacked. And then you get Rey getting backup from people, and they're being attacked. Yeah. And so all this stuff to where finally it culminated a few weeks ago on SmackDown to where Rey's wife, Angie, and his son, Aaliyah, were in the crowd.
Daughter.
No, son. She made a decision.
You heard it here, folks.
Yeah. She made a decision. Good for you, Aaliyah. I mean, Andrew. Sorry. His daughter, Aaliyah, who she was on WWE TV a few years ago.
Yeah.
They've done family stuff with the Mysterios before. But Angie and Aaliyah are in the crowd, and Dominic shows up after a match Rey has. He goes up to his mom and essentially like her
disrespects
her. Disrespects her. Tells her to shut
that
up.
That was the last straw.
And then Rey comes down and hits Dominic.
That's your mom, but that's also my wife.
Yeah, it's like, you want a match at Mania, you got
and
it.
And Dominic turns around. He's like, how could you hit your son?
Yeah.
Dad, I'm your son.
Which is so good.
It's a chicken shit thing to do. Yeah. He did so well.
So good.
Yeah. And it just carried into this match. Eddie, big highlight in his entrance, comes out in a lowrider being driven by Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Rey. Yes, yeah. I have Eddie on the brain because Viva La Raza, Eddie Guerrero's theme, plays
Eddie
for
would
a second.
Do that during his entrances, though.
Yeah.
Come out in low rider.
And then Booyaka 619 starts playing Rey Mysterio.
Rey with the tribute, with the mask tribute to the great Muda,
who went in the Hall of Fame.
Legendary Japanese wrestler who went to the Hall of Fame this weekend.
And the two had a solid match with
very good.
Both playing
it
the roles
good
very
match.
Well.
Rey, very good match.
Rey spanked Dominic, which was
as
a highlight.
We mentioned earlier.
Jeff's only bonus points of the weekend.
Yeah, gosh dang it.
Angie and Aaliyah are there. They get involved a little bit. Dominic throws a drink on his sister.
I think Dominic should have won. I had him
I agree.
Winning. I had him winning. I just think he needs the bump. Even though he's been doing great, I think you need to continue at that momentum and then he can come out and just be smarmy and just be a little shit. And it's like, I knew I could do it, dad. I beat you. Like, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff like that. There was no, well, that's not true. Damian Priest and Finn Balor came to try and distract.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it made more sense to me for Dominic to win that.
Yeah, because it's one of those things, it would, because where do you, this will be the question that pops up again later on in the episode, but where do you go with Dominic from here? Because he lost to Rey.
Right.
Rey didn't really need the win.
Yeah.
So, like, you just...
He's a Hall of Famer now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did it for the moment for him to celebrate with Angie and Aaliyah in there or whatever, but, like, is Dominic forever excommunicated? How do you resolve that?
Yeah.
Like, you can't keep going with Rey trying to pull Dominic away from the dark side because it's going to become played out pretty soon.
You at least, if he's going to lose, you at least have him lose The Judgment Day comes out, expresses their disappointment. They attack him. Mm-hmm. Rey then jumps in and defends his son. Then that it just comes full circle. But I don't know. I like Dominic as a heel for as long as they can, for as long as they can do it. I think he's doing a good job. I think he's coming to his own as an individual.
And it would have, the character continuation development would have come more smoothly if Dominic would have won.
I just think it would have added to his story if he wins.
Yeah. On the note of the Judgment Day, the women's championship match was up next. SmackDown Women's Championship.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley, has a rocket strap to her. And she, and against Charlotte Flair, who Rhea Ripley not is a big fan of her,
but is an absolute superstar.
I mean, she's had moments here. You know, she has established herself already as a primetime player in the WWE for as long as she's been on the main roster, but she's been wishy-washy as far as booking wise in the last 3 years until about last year when she joined the Judgment Day. And now she's been given a role and she has been red hot for the better part of the last year, culminating with her, you know, at least being shot to the next level by winning the Women's Royal Rumble,
by entering in number one.
Number one,
that lasted rarefied the longest. Air.
Exactly.
Yeah. She is, in my opinion, should be and is going to be the face of women's wrestling for the next 10 years.
Oh, yeah. And Finn Balor technically is the leader of the Judgment Day, but Rhea Ripley has been the focal point.
She's the mommy.
Yeah, exactly. Damian and Finn, Damian Priest and Finn Balor have taken their role in the Judgment Day have taken a back seat to what Rhea and Dominic are doing, because Rhea is the one who's pretty much been the mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's, like I said, she's a superstar. She's got an incredible look.
Mm-hmm.
She's solid, not just solid. She's incredible in the ring. Like her work is just top notch. She doesn't look uncomfortable. There are some people that go in and like they're doing moves, but they're clearly like kind of timid and they're going, and she just is full force. She works like the men. You know, you watch it and you feel like you're just watching a match. You're just watching someone work. You're not like, oh, this is a women's match. This is a woman working. Yeah. It's a wrestler going in there and just working like a good wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt that her opponent was Charlotte, who, you know, love her or hate her, same way. She goes full force in a match. Yeah,
exactly.
She doesn't pull back. She doesn't do anything that you would see 10 years ago in female matches.
Yeah.
Both are just solid competitors who go in there, give everything they have, and put on, I would say, the reports going back and forth all week were that this was going to main event night one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I had as far as match order. I had this main eventing.
Yeah, so looking at it, it could be justified. These are two very good wrestlers.
Yeah.
Rhea won the Royal Rumble, and I kind of have this mindset that, you know, if you're going to have a woman's Rumble and a men's Rumble, both should main event a night. Theoretically.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
So it would have been justified for them to have main evented this first night. Looking at it now, in hindsight, I do think the better match, storyline-wise, headlined. But, you know, this was a very good match. If I had to rank the matches in order of best to worst, this would be very high up there.
Top three, easily.
Top three for the night.
Yeah.
Very good start to finish.
They were very physical,
and
you can trust these two workers to be physical.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of the misconception about women's wrestling is like, even with a good wrestler, it's like, yeah, but their matches, you're not going to get a hard hitting affair, like, you know, like with
tonight's Gunther,
Sheamus, and Drew McIntyre.
Yeah. You would not expect a women's match to hit as hard like a match like that. But I would say they went at it. I mean, Rhea did a German suplex to Charlotte that, you know, kind of Charlotte flipped, had a little bit too much rotation.
Sure.
And that just shows they go all in, you know, kind of bust up her nose a little bit, but it just a good, good match.
They're not afraid to lay it in and like go off the top rope. And
it looks good. Their stuff looks good. I'm glad it started to pick up because for me personally, the first 5, 6, 7 minutes were a little slow, a little methodical, a little unremarkable to where I was like, I hope this starts like getting better because like nothing spectacular is really happening yet. But then when they really, you could tell there was a switch that flipped and it started to become more physical.
Yeah.
It started to really lay into one another and the story started ramping up. The back and forth started ramping up. Each woman got their own bit of offense in. Each woman worked from under at certain points. And then it started to flesh out as a match and you'd see the story continue and unfold. And it was a little bit, I felt a little bit that way with the main event, but kind of different. But it evened out to where it did turn into a very good match.
And I think on our cards, all three of us had Rhea win.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the absolute smartest decision they could have done. It wouldn't have made any sense to smash her over the way they've been doing and then just have Charlotte Flair winning. Mm-hmm. That's when you kind of step back and you're like, is there like some weird collusion going on in that Charlotte wins? And she like has to maintain, like she gets to pick who beats her, quote unquote. Is there politicking going on? And there were a couple moments where I was like, oh, come on. But they made the right decision.
Yeah.
And there's no reason you have Rhea go from number one in the Royal Rumble, win the whole thing, and not win the title.
It was more earned than Charlotte. Charlotte just came back first night to a bunch of fanfare.
Yeah.
But then like, I mean, she came back and won the SmackDown Women's Championship and then just kind of was flat
Which,
the rest of the time before she was like involved with Rhea.
Which was she supposed... I mean, clearly Rhea is the heel in the match. Mm-hmm. So by just general old school wrestling dynamics, was Charlotte supposed to be the babyface? Because
I don't know.
She's worked as a heel for so long that even if she was trying to be a baby face, it just didn't come off that way.
I don't even know if, you know, backstage they were
viewing
it that way. Cause I can't imagine WWE in today's culture of Triple H running things and having the reins, them looking at how the crowd's reacting to Rhea and not saying, well, that's who the crowd's going to be behind at Mania. Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing is you don't have traditional baby faces and heels anymore to where it's like, this is the good guy. And as a crowd, you root for the good guy. This is the bad guy. And they like the crowds are smarter now. Mm-hmm. And thanks to the Attitude Era, like it ushered in, this person's supposed to be bad, but the crowd is cheering for them. Mm-hmm. It's kind of dictated on what the crowd response is now. Mm-hmm. So even if, in a traditional wrestling sense, you're like, this character is the heel. But if the crowd is cheering them, it's like, sure, in name only, but the crowd's going to cheer for who they want to cheer for kind of thing.
Yeah. So it ended up being a very good match. I think they paused. They showed Charlotte's reaction to Rhea winning too much. They focused too much on Charlotte.
Yeah.
And they should have focused all of it on Rhea. Charlotte, this isn't your time, so it shouldn't be a good job type deal because it was kind of like a sneaky finish.
Yeah.
So they still kept their attention on Charlotte, but not as long as Rhea, and Rhea got her moment in the sun and thinks she's going to do great. The main event of night one was the culmination of one of the aspects of the Bloodline story. What's been great about the Bloodline story over the last 3 years is there's been so many facets of it that this just happens to be the hottest two portions of it. Roman and Cody, and then KO and Sammy versus the Usos, which really was Sammy and the Usos for a long time because it was Sammy versus KO, and Sammy was part of the Bloodline. It's been the best thing going in WWE in the longest time, and this was the culmination of this aspect of it. And I almost was disappointed because it seemed like so the entrances were great. Everybody like
Lose Vert, baby.
Yeah, that was random and stupid. So the crowd was behind them during the entrances, but I feel like stuff was going flat as far as crowd reaction wise goes. In the first like 10 minutes, it was kind of, you know, there were ebbs and flows of like the crowd coming to life, and you know, kind of, but it just was really lolly for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it also seemed like there were portions of the match to where, like, the way it was put together, it seemed like things were missing, and it seemed like a couple times that they were going to end it, and you kind of are like, that's a little, like, abrupt. It's a little early.
Yeah. Are they trying to rush this?
And I felt like, I was like, oh, you know, shit. Two nights, we do this to avoid them getting burnt out, you know, the crowd getting burnt out. But so much emotionally was put into the last match. And, you know, there's been so much. It's been such a great night, and the crowd's been so into it. Has the air been let out? Because there were things that happened to where I was like, me personally, I feel like that should have gotten a bigger reaction based upon the reactions it got in weeks past on Raw or SmackDown or at the Rumble or blah, blah, blah. And I was like, is this going to end up being just like something that drags on and the crowd gets tired? Thankfully,
it wasn't.
No, because it hit a point to where it started getting, at least for me as a fan and seeing the story play out, and how I feel like the most important part was the storytelling aspect. How do you tell the story in the match? The crowd started coming alive to where eventually the end of the match, beautiful ending. The crowd popped huge. Mm-hmm. You know, you had your false finishes all over the place. Yeah. Some people have their opinions on whether or not they think there's too many false finishes.
Sometimes
I think it was fine for here.
For this, it's fine.
And it ended up being a good match. It ended up being a great ending to night one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Agreed. So any other thoughts on like that match in particular?
I mean, you covered it. I mean, it was just excellent storytelling over a number of months, and we finally see Sammy and Kevin Owens, who everyone knows that they came up through the ranks together. They're legit best friends, and anyone who has a best friend, like, just the idea they're tagging together, main eventing WrestleMania against the odds kind of thing, and just there's storytelling on a larger scale, and then there's storytelling you try and have within a match, and I think just they nailed the spots that they needed to, not just the wrestling spots, but like storytelling, spacing, pacing, just four absolute professionals, veterans who know exactly what they're doing, who understand ring psychology, who understand the craft of storytelling, and execution. It's just, it was great. And the outcome was as it should be. Sammy and KO win the tag belts. They embrace in the middle of the ring, effectively putting the end to the Usos' long reign. And then it's like, what does this mean for the bloodline, for the Usos, like that they've let down Roman Reigns, the tribal chief? Where do they stand? It left questions for the second night of WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. How is this going to lend itself to the main event? And that's good. And we got the satisfying end to the first night.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for anything that draws off of real world relationships.
Yep.
So the idea that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have been best friends for 20 years, you know, throughout their entire careers, they started off as tag team champions in Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
And Kevin Owens at the time turned on Sammy, and has been that like history of them being rivals ever since then. But just knowing that they've always been best friends from the start, and just having that moment where they're in the ring together and they get the win, man, it made me emotional.
Yeah,
it was the perfect end to night one.
Yeah, yep.
I couldn't have dreamt up a better ending.
Plus, the ring gear, they had some odes to Pro Wrestling Gorilla in there, which is a company they work for.
Yep.
I also want to point out Michael Cole has gotten a lot of shit over the years. He's definitely been kind of just a Vince McMahon yes man. And Vince McMahon communicates with the announcers, and Michael Cole just kind of does whatever Vince McMahon wants. Michael Cole has had a really strong couple of years. I mean, he's been around, he's been in the WWE for 25 years plus. I think
they
for a long time.
I think they said last night that
is his 22nd WrestleMania.
Okay,
his 20, like he has the record for the most WrestleManias commentated.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In terms of emotion and for the big matches, for the audience at home, framing the story of the match and just his emotion, I think Michael Cole was one of the MVPs tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and then there was the Pat McAfee.
Yeah.
He's a big fan of Pat McAfee. But The Miz and Snoop Dogg were the hosts.
It was stuff. It was let you up stuff, because really nothing was a let you up match.
There were no breather match. Mm-hmm. There were no filler or buffer matches to like give the crowd a chance to chill out. Yeah. It was all solid.
Yeah.
And so you need those segments of The Miz calling out someone out. And Pat McAfee, who's, we all love him. He's he's a well-loved member of the team and personality in the WWE. Came out and did that. George Kittle, tight end for the 49ers. It's WrestleMania stuff. Mm-hmm. It's whatever. It's, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna look at my phone and wait for the main event.
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you everybody for listening to our discussion over night one of WrestleMania 39 with Jeff Wright. If you're listening to this on Friday, April 7th, the day we released it, stay tuned tomorrow, Saturday, April 8th. For our discussion on night two. And if you're listening to this after Saturday, April 8th, enjoy both discussions as you see it now on wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.